This is Bad Movies We Love, part of the Scheist Podcast Network.
If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spotlight session here on Bad Movies We Love, where we don't just talk about the movies, we talk to the people who make them. As always, I'm your host, Nick Scheist, and in today's Filmmaker in Focus episode, I sat down with Spanish filmmaker Haxa, and he was joined by one of his collaborators and cast members, Carmen Gonzalez, and we'll explore their creative process, the stories behind the scenes, and what it's like to bring bold, independent cinema to life in Spain, and their new project, Producto Local. Thank you so much for being here today. It's going to be a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, you know, you had reached out to me about Producto Local, which has, I think it's completed, right? But is not distributed yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I want to clarify, this is a television series, right?
Yeah, it's a series of 8 chapters of 55 minutes each. Okay. And our goal is to make it available on video on demand streaming services, even if it's more author-alike platforms, like a movie, for example. Well, movie would be awesome, but...
Yeah. And have you done television before? Because I looked at your credits. I was able to watch a handful of your short films. But is this the first time you've done like episodic TV?
Yeah. Yeah. We've been doing films, short films, long film and documentaries for years. Well, Haxa has been doing it. And this was like, we have to do this as a challenge to prove ourselves and to prove the industry that we can do something. Even if we are nobody, we can still do something.
So what inspired you to start Producto Local, and like, what story in the series were you most passionate about?
My first thoughts when writing the first script were around people of mature adults of at least 55 years or older who were stuck in their childhood, in their adolescence, in their golden years, and who were not updated to society, today's society standards. But after we started the rehearsals, we decided to inspire ourselves on the people who lived in the left bank of Bilbao, which is like the left side of a bank, not a river, a part of sea that comes into the earth, which separates the two sides of Bilbao. The left side is more a worker, more mountain area, and the right bank is more wealthy.
It's wealthy, yeah. So we got inspired by the left bank and the neighborhoods because they are where the working class people live, and that's where we live.
I understand. I saw the project described as being made with zero pesetas. So how does that philosophy shape the approach to filmmaking? And is pesetas currency?
Yeah, pesetas was the currency before the euros. We say that we have zero pesetas, zero euros. As it is not true, actually, we spent around 5,000 euros, but we made the project without any external economical support and without any big resources. We used one tripod, one camera, and one boom for the audio. So we've made it from collaborations and even the businesses that has helped us that have helped us with the project have just or were at least helped us in a non-economical way. Even if there are logos of collaborations, they are collaborations more for spaces, for clothing, for hats.
Yeah, so we've done this with very, very low budget. Haxa put at the beginning €1,000 to buy the attrezzo, the food, the some clothing for the characters. And that was it. There were no partnerships, no producing companies or anything, just people wanting to do this project.
I see. And I'm going to ask sort of a follow-up question to that. In Spain, like, do you typically have support for like television and film industry? Are there grants? Are there loans and stuff available to you?
There is support in Spain, specifically in Basque Country. There are big investments in cinema from the government, from government funds for the cinema, but they are limited to big industries, to big producers, and commonly they end in the hands of everyday big names of Basque Country film creators. So for us who legally aren't nothing, it is very, very difficult, if I don't say impossible, to get any funds. For example, we didn't receive any help from local authorities neither, as every collaboration has been from private businesses, even if they are smaller or bigger.
Yeah. So legally we are nothing because we are not a company. Each of the actors has its own job. I am a teacher, or there is somebody who is a gardener, and the director, Haxa, he's the only one who works full-time doing projects, audiovisual projects, but he has never got any money, okay? So he works for himself, but he's not even a company or a self-employed. So that's why we couldn't ask for any economic support from the government or anything.
Gotcha. In watching some of the short films as well, it looks like that is sort of done like guerrilla filmmaking, done very low budget, but using single camera. So I'm curious, you have a lot of projects under your belt. You've made, what, 20 something different shorts and features, music videos over the course of the last like 10 years or so. What have you learned in terms of making things on a micro budget scale?
Yeah, I think that the most important thing I learned is to focus on what I can tell through my cinema. If I can't film in a police office, I won't. If I can't make a fantasy drama, I won't. I will limit myself to the places I can record, to the stories I can tell. Moreover, I have learned to warn the local authorities when I make violent or a little bit concerning scenes in exteriors, no, on location, on real location. And I have learned to manage to fit my characters to the actors more than the actors to the characters. So not only they give their personal personality to the characters.
And the personal approach to the project, they make. So because we are, all of us, we are volunteers doing this kind of cinema. We are not, well, professionals, as we are not paid actors. Some of them have like been doing acting for years, but they still have to work as something else. Okay. So that's why the characters that Haxa writes have to be adapted to the actor, more like trying to look for a perfect actor, because with no money, you cannot get a Morgan Freeman or a, I don't know. Okay.
One day, day you'll get Morgan Freeman.
Very few people are interested in such a big project without getting any income for years.
It's hard to find people who want to collaborate when you cannot reward them with money or just for the sake of it. You just do it to do it.
Just for the sake of the art. That leads me into an interesting question. How did you two meet?
So I worked as a teacher for refugees, and I work in a certain place in my city behind the town hall. And there was a series being filmed by Netflix, every day. So when I had to go to work, I had to stop, wait until they finished the scene and then cross. So, and that was every day. So one day, one of the camera holders or one of the workers told me, you have to join the team because we are avoiding you to come late to your work. We are stopping you for coming late. So I said, okay, what do I have to do to be an extra? And he told me the website. And then 2 days later, I acted as an extra on that series. And then from that, one day I signed up in a WhatsApp group where people were looking for extras. And there was Haxa looking for people to join his team of doing documentaries and short films at the time.
It was a short film, yeah.
And I was an extra for one of his short films.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's really nice to hear. So when you talk about working with very little money, what are some of the most creative ways that you can stretch those dollars?
One of the things I think I got more advantage is that my camera has only one lenses in its part of the body of the camera, so I cannot change the lenses for a 18, a 50, whatever. So I try to keep it as realistic as possible and to fit into that kind of video of aesthetic. I limit my stories, as I told you, to realistic stories, locations. And if my camera can't compete with the more professional, or not only professional, but more cinematographic cameras that are on the market, I try that the locations and that in the places where the stories are happening to have a very important meaning into the story. So the location is more than is more a character than just a place where the stuff happens.
And you had also mentioned that the team that you work with, the actors, your collaborators, they contribute a lot in terms of costume, vehicles, homes, personal resources. So I'm curious how the sort of the sacrifices of your collaborators impact the spirit of production. And was there anything that someone supplied or donated that really surprised you?
Yeah. So all of us have given, or we have tried to give the most of us. Like, we know that when you have no money and you have no infrastructure or means, you have to give more than the 100%. Every day. So that's why people have contributed with their house, with their cars, with their, even with their pets or their kids to play a role or to be an extra at the back of the scene. We have had very good contributors, which have been, even if they had a little role in the series, they have done a lot of work behind the cameras. For example, we have one of the actors who he has multiple sclerosis, the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, it's hard to walk, but even though he gives most of himself and he helps us moving from one place to another with the car, he is amazing. Also, we have somebody who is quite mature. He's retired, but we needed to recreate a place that looked like Russia, and he handcrafted an Orthodox cross from wood just for the project. And wow, that's amazing, because you cannot find somebody who would do this for free.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how many people are on the crew for the series?
The main crew would be about 10 people. 10 main cast actors, and then me. So about 11 main crew members. But the whole crew, considering the collaborators, would be around 200 people.
But okay. Behind the camera, there is only one. He's the only one who directs and writes the script and records. There is nobody just behind the camera. He is just himself.
Apart from the musical score and from the original soundtrack, which is composed by a little group of composers and a main director, musical director, or main director of composers. Yeah, the rest, for the good or for the bad, it's on my side and on my responsibility, or has been.
So that's why when, for example, I have a little character that I play on the series, but many days I have to go and be like the boom operator with the thing, which I hate because I'm very short and the boom is heavy. And so all the actors or all the participants or collaborators, maybe one day you are the actor, but the next day you have to be the boom operator because he's going to be with the camera and somebody else has to be with the thing.
So it's a team effort all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are, I mean, when we talk about our group, no, it can be seen as a group effort, but at the end of the day, I think that there are a group of 5-6 people who have contributed more, as for example, this man who has multiple sclerosis, he's helped more as a helper, as a meritory, than as an actor, no? As his role was about just 4 scenes, I think. And even if he has this disease, he's a sword master. And he, for example, was controlling the boom as the best of us, even to his condition.
I mean, that's great to hear that, like, the people who volunteer really put a lot of themselves into the project. How do you handle unexpected expenses when working with very little money? When something pops up that you don't expect, how do you deal with that?
Well, there wasn't many unexpected expenses during the filming because the clothing for the characters were from our house or from Vinted or secondhand shops. So it was quite cheap. And then the food that you eat in the scene.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't much during the filming. That's why he just spent like €1,000. It's been more in the afterwards when we have everything filmed and you need to buy a more space for the the storage, or you need to buy a new microphone, or you have to pay a distribution company, or all these
signs for
or the posters, or
yeah,
whatever you may think of that are individually there are little things, but they sum up, and for something that has no backup, not financial backups, yeah, it's been quite an economical effort, as we haven't an income from the series.
So now we are in 5,000 euros, so 1,000 from the film in itself, and now 4,000 for all these little expenses that come up after the filming.
I understand. I saw the work in the press release. It's described as like indie film from Indigent. So what does that label mean to you in practice?
So that this happened because we started realizing that we didn't have anything. Like, we didn't have any support from the local town halls or the just. So one day we were talking about independent cinema, and in Spanish it's called cine independiente, and from independiente it came indigente, which means somebody who doesn't have anything. We don't have a label behind, we don't have a partnership, we don't have a producing company. So we are making films or content from scratch. That's why
And does working that way feel more like limitation, or does it give you a kind of freedom to not have somebody telling you what to do, because this is basically a singular vision on your part?
Yeah. From one part, it's a limitation. It's a big burden on my back and on the back of the project. But as you've said, it makes us be free, be completely free to tell the stories the way we want and to portray the scenes, the script, and every single creative aspect as I want it to be, as it fits into what I can make, you know. But I haven't any boss who's telling me, no, you have to shoot this that way or the other, or you have to portray it in that location. Or...
So how do you and the team stay patient, stay positive when needing to change things? Because I read that you have been kicked out of some public spaces that you had permits to film in.
Yeah, well, in Spain you can film anywhere in the street as long as it's not a busy street. We are not filming in the middle of Madrid or Barcelona. We are in little town halls or in little, neighborhoods where there are no people on the street, really, or not many.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are a very limited group, and the technical equipment, it's
very small.
It's one tripod, the camera, and the boom. It's not as if we have lights and grips.
We don't have a truck or a lorry behind us carrying anything. No, we just have a car carrying everything. So it's not... There is no much that we affect on the street. But yeah, sometimes you... Even if we are in a period of time where there are mobile phones recording everything and everyone is on TikTok or Instagram uploading their faces everywhere for free, but when they see a camera on a tripod, they think that you are filming them, or so sometimes they get scared from the camera and they freak out, and some people say silly things or they want to kick you out from the street.
And I think that the people who may have given us problems in the past are not only people who are scared of a camera, but people who are troublesome in general, not to us, not for that specific moment, you know. So we, when that happened, we try to say, whatever, and don't make a big deal of it.
And maybe most of those people are under the influence of some things.
I read too that you had some instances where police were called in for, I think it was a simulated sex scene or a suicide scene or some other things. So how do you navigate filming those kinds of things in a public space when you've had to deal with the cops?
Yeah, well, that's the hard way I learned to warn the local authorities. But there was the suicide was in my last feature. And even if there were a group of around 30 people and there was a coordinated choreography, and actually the shot was very, very limited and was a very limited space. So even if everyone outside the shot could see that it was fiction, because it was very unreal if you saw the whole thing, we got the unpleasant visit of two police cars, one ambulance. And in Producto Local, there was a sex scene that we didn't thought that would be impressive or alarming, but
it was apparently because my colleague was filming, well, two of them, of course they have to be two, and one elderly woman passed by and she thought it was real, so she called the cops, and then we had to show the cops the extract on the camera, the filming,
the material,
so they saw that, okay, you cannot see what you think it's happening because there wasn't anything happening. It was just a simulation, like in cinema, everything is fake. So,
and it was, I mean, it was very, 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 very simulated. As for what kind of shot it was, there was another occasion in which we warned the police because it was going to be very explicit, not in what you could see, because there couldn't be seen anything, but in what you could hear, so you could imagine or suppose that something was happening.
So this time we called the cops and we told them that we were seen in this scene, in this street, on this car, so they didn't have to worry, that it was all prepared.
And there were posters? No.
And we put some posters or
on a fence
saying this is a film being recorded, so filmed.
I see. And not every interaction with the public is necessarily negative, right? I read that you had some residents watching from their balconies and cheering you on. So how did it feel to, it's almost like theater in that way.
Yeah. And this happened the same day as we were filming this violent scene.
Yeah, I was filming a very, very violent scene. And because we knew that it was very violent, we called the cops. And they said, okay, you're going to be here filming. It's okay, we won't be coming around. But the people in the building in the back started looking at outside the window, and we told them that it was all fake, but they wanted to watch what we were doing, and they were clapping when we finished. And yeah. It was fun. Yeah.
Did it make you feel good to get the applause and the sort of the positive feedback from the crowd?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, because it was more embarrassing, maybe. Mm. I was, because the scene was very violent, And yeah, and I'm not a professional actress. This was my first thing as an acting. So it felt a bit violent because they were like, in jokingly, they were trying to shout at my colleague because he was being a bit rude with me. But it was fun.
I see, I see. I want to ask you about your creative home, and this is Sastraka, right? Yeah. So how did that relationship start, and how did your time there maybe challenge the misunderstood nature of the place?
Yeah, okay, I will start to say that Sastraka is a castetze, like a house of the youth. Not always so young. There in Sastraka, for example, there are people from 20 to 60 or 70 years old. And it's a place, it's a kind of place that there is in Basque Country, which it's a non-governmental place who legally is not allowed to be there. Technically,
so it's like young people use a building that wasn't being used, and they self-manage it. They self-organize it. I don't know if there is something like this in the rest of the countries. I suppose there is. But it's everything self-managed. Yeah. So here the young people make different cultural activities. So you have theater classes, yoga, poetry jams, sewing classes. They have a garden. So all these activities help the community. And the community gets into this place. It's a place where you can do anything for free as long as it's something positive for somebody. So we didn't have any place to rehearse because, as I said before, we are not a company or anything. Mm-hmm. We don't get any financial support. So at the beginning, we were doing the rehearsals in a very well-known American fast food company. Because that was the only place where the person who works there doesn't care if you are eating just one or drinking just one coffee and be there for 3 hours. They don't care. And we don't annoy anyone. But also, we couldn't rehearse every type of scenes there because there were people. So one day, one woman told us about this Sastraka place, this self-managed organization, and we went there and asked if we could use a room to rehearse, and they told us yeah.
So you can, a way to imagine it and put it in your head, it was an old intern, a school of nuns back in the 20th century. And after they moved to another institution, they left it out of order and in a state of abandon. So these young people, not so young as I said, entered, tried to recover it and to bring tools to update it, to cover any structural problems. You know, no, a lot of work to make this fourth building.
It's a very
big building.
That if it wasn't for these young people that keep it up and keep it safe, it would be destroyed.
Mm. And I mean, it's a community led, self sustained place. Yeah. And that seems to sort of go hand in hand with your filmmaking philosophy of being community-based, being self-sustaining, and with the building sort of being maybe an important part of the community, how do you view your role in the community as a filmmaker?
Well, we try always to attract people into the films we make. As we are part of this place, the area, you know, the two small rooms that we have for our cinema crew or activities are also shared in case anyone of the community needed for cinema purposes. So we try to encourage people to come and participate. We make a small event of, I don't know how it's said in English, but a welcoming event to show people, like an open house, no? But for our activities. So we portray film frames. We explained how we developed the project, what we had in mind. And this was before the first months of rehearsal of Producto Local back in 2021. And that way we got to know some people, not a lot, because it's hard to attract people to something that it's voluntary, but we got to know some very good people for the project that way.
That's awesome. What can people who are outside the community do to help protect vital spaces like that?
Well, I don't know about other countries. Here, what happens is that these gasteches, which are the House of the Youth, mm-hmm. have very bad fame, or people think that, I don't know if you know about the Basque country's history.
No, not really.
Well, it used to have a terrorist group because they wanted to fight for freedom of this Basque country, which has it. We have our own language, so it's not similar, but like the IRA in Ireland, something similar. It was like parallel, more or less. So these places usually have a very bad reputation. They were linked to this leftist place where young people just smoke joints, but not really. If one young person wants to smoke a joint, they can do it anywhere. But that's not a place. So there are elderly people chewing things, or they are planting tomatoes, they are doing many things,
making doll activities for children, even local schools public schools go to Sastraka to benefit from open activities that other voluntary people do for children.
So the good thing is that we, thanks to this project, I got to know one gasteche from the inside, break all my previous ideas of what I thought that happened in these places. And also many people from our surroundings or around us have got to know these places. So I think that people have to be critic about what we read on the news, because sometimes what they tell us is not the truth, or not the complete truth. We have to be ready to open our eyes and getting to know the community and all the places, because if not, we will get to be led by people who have interests.
It's very well said. You, speaking of the community, you had to go out and reach out to private businesses in order to help make this movie, to get what storefronts to film in or to get clothing. And in this case, I want to know, how did you meet Angel Amor, and what made that relationship with the hat shop come together?
Yeah. Well, I could say I could develop a fantastic story, but the reality is that I spent weeks calling businesses, local businesses, for clothes, for spaces, for just at least a collaboration to make the project known. And I came up, I found this craftsmanship, this craftsman. And I thought, oh, I didn't know that there was a hat maker in Bilbao. And not only he was a hat maker, but after we talked with him, after Carmen researched him, we found that he was a hat maker who had worked for very important films and productions, as for Netflix, with a very long time career and relation with United Kingdom productions. And Carmen found that.
Yeah, when he told us you can come to my workshop and we'll figure out some hats for the actors or for the characters. And I was looking for his name on the internet, and I found out that Angel had been working for Maleficent and doing the horns for Angelina Jolie. And for me, it was like shocking and thrilling at the same time, thinking that this man who has a long experience and career and has been working with Disney and a lot of big movies was ready to give us not only his time to make the hats, but the hands and all his knowledge to create something for our characters and just for free. So for these things, for me, they are very thrilling and they move me, because how could I think that somebody who's been like in the main movies was going to give us so much for us?
For free and making it custom, as I told him, we could use this hat or the other, or what hat could fit you, as we supposed that we couldn't use some more expensive hats or whatever, no? So it was more than enough for me if he'll let us use any of the hats that he had already created. But he said, no, I will make them custom, and I will measure the actor and actresses, and you will tell me about the series, about the characters, what you want to portray through the hat. And when you finish, you bring them back. I know that some of them can be damaged through the process, but I have no problem. And all the career-related information, it was something that we researched apart from him. He didn't tell in any moment any of the very important or curricularly awesome things that he had made or worked for. Yeah,
I mean, that must have been an amazing sense of sort of victory to get somebody of Angel's stature, who had worked for Disney and had worked on very large scale, expensive projects, to not only work with you, but to provide you with the attire. Did he share any insights after the fact? Once you started working with him, did he share anything creatively that influenced you?
Not really. We didn't want to disturb him more than what he had. So we went to his workshop four times. Once to, because he also let us film within his workshop. Mm-hmm. So
out of curiosity, in the third chapter's intro, he appears in a very short scene. As the characters are trying hats and on his workshop. Yeah.
So he just wanted, he really wanted to know about each character to create a perfect tailor-made hat or for them. So we tried to disturb him the least as possible because he's very busy and
It's a lot of attention to detail and a lot of effort that he put in. So looking back at the entire production, was that the most surprising collaboration or the most unexpected thing that helped shape Producto Local?
It may be one of the most unexpected ones, but I think that I couldn't say, okay, this one is the best and the others aren't. I know that there have been collaborations that have been more impressive than others, but at the end of the day, I needed a lawyer office. I needed a meet shop, workshops,
hotels,
restaurants. So I have to be very thankful to each one of them, as I received a lot, I mean hundreds and hundreds of negatives, one by one, calling and saying no.
Yeah, after calling maybe all the companies in Bilbao or most of them, and you get all the no's, all these closed doors, when you get 20 or 30 little companies that say yes to your project for free, voluntarily, it feels amazing. So they are all important for us.
Yeah, and not every single thing you need for the production is going to be glamorous. Like you said, you need offices, you need hotels, you need food. Not everything is going to be flashy, but everything is important. So what advice would you give to indie filmmakers who are starting out, maybe making their first film, or that think they need big budgets or studios to do something impactful?
I would say three main things. The first, please do a short film. Don't be as crazy or stupid as I have been. it's true. It will kill you. It's difficult. Now I can love as, okay, we've managed it, but the process has been very, very hard. The second thing, and I think that it may be more important, is to limit yourself to what you have and what you consider that you can get, even if it is hard. For example, it is hard to get a hotel. Yeah, it is freaking hard because hotels don't want this kind of collaboration usually. No? But it's possible. It's possible to get a police office. Well, it may be more difficult if you have no budget, as it's related with authorities, with law enforcement or a public school. As there are more bureaucracy involved, it may be very, very difficult, if not impossible. And the third thing I could say as a director, normally, but I could say that we have the indie directors, we have to focus on direction. And I mean, okay, nowadays there are a big technical ways to make big budget productions on video on stream platforms. But I feel that we are losing the direction as why do its shot, its movement, the choreography, the position of the actors in the movie, and to give yourself wings to express in a way that you feel comfortable with and without needing to imitate or mirror the big productions. No, there are a lot of ways to tell a story. There are not infinite, but there are thousands and thousands of possibilities. So make something good, focusing on why you use why you decide to make a single shot, a movement in the shot, the choreography. I think these basic matters may be something that we are losing as we are forgetting. Yeah, thank you.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up question. A couple of, well, the short films that I did watch of yours, they don't have a lot of dialogue. There's not a lot of written communication, at least that I hear. I can see the characters talking. There is an implied conversation. So I'm curious, from your experience, how do you approach telling a story where you're going to do a lot of visual language over spoken language?
In this case, in Producto Local, I think that I tried and I think I managed to do a 50-50 work. No, I okay. mean, there are, in this case, in Producto Local, there are lots of dialogue. I needed one more or less to subtitle it to English and keeping the customs, the expressions, the way they express themselves, so other people can understand it, as it is not literal in English. But in this case, I tried to maintain that 50-50, and not only in dialogue and non-dialogue scenes, but in commercial and non-commercial mm-hmm. ways of approaching the film. No, the last short films I make public in YouTube were some works I did during the rehearsals of Producto Local, and in every one of them I tried to make a different approach. I mean, one approach was to tell a very fast story, very classic story. Another one was to focus just on shots that were filmed from above the characters. Other ones were focused on choreographies. And in Producto Local, I tried to do my best to do that 50-50 work. No, I'd be an authorial director in some moments, but try to tell a story that could convey with most of the people who watch it, you know, and try to make scenes that are no longer than 4 minutes in average. Carmen has seen it. I think that she can...
Well, I haven't seen all of his short films because some of them are a little bit...
Weird.
Or... yeah, but... I think in Producto Local he has conveyed everything that he has been learning for the last 10 years doing these short films.
I see. And what about for you, Carmen? You said that you didn't, you know, start off in the film business. You were an extra. Now you're acting, you're operating the boom microphone. It seems like you're doing some production assistant type of work as well. Yeah. What has it been like for you on this journey?
Well, on the one hand, I feel that not many people can do cinema or can make movies. So I'm aware that even if I'm not rich, I have a very normal income. I have a good timetable nowadays, not before, to be able to do cinema or to create things. So I'm aware of that privilege that some other people can't do it, because even if it's their passion, their dream, they have to work from 9 to 9 to work to earn money. So on that side, I feel happy that I'm learning, but also it requires a lot of energy during the filming, and now it requires things that we don't know, because I'm not a manager or anything. He's not into this promoting thing that we have to do. So yeah. We are just learning day by day. We are
production our subject.
No. So we are learning day by day and trying to do our best to make this project be seen somewhere, because we started doing this Producto Local in 2021. So we want these 4 years to be meaningful and to be like a product that shows what we have been able to do. He as a director, the music composer as a composer, some actors as actors, and me as doing something from here and there, yes, trying to do my best.
Well, I'm sure you did. And I was able to watch the trailer for Producto Local, which came out on the 6th, so like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
So what's next? Like, the trailer is out now. What part of the process are you in? Do you shop the trailer to potential distributors, investors, film festivals? What's next?
So we have the trailer in different trailer festivals.
Okay.
And now we are trying to do little like showing our first two chapters, the first two
premieres
of the series, so people can see it. So we have one in our city, in Madrid, in Barcelona, and we try to do this everywhere in the world. We want people who want to see the series, we will give them the first two chapters for free, of course. So they see what we've done. They hopefully think it's good, or they tell us, okay, it's...
Or even if they think it's the worst thing that they've ever seen, but... to create a discussion around it.
Because as we said, we are nobody, so
we need ways to
prove ourselves.
Yeah.
And to make it known so we can get into any kind of streaming platform, because our last goal is to people to be able to watch it.
So when you go to a distribution company, not all of them open the door. They say, most of them don't answer because you are not big enough or you don't have a well-known
name.
So you have to, we are doing a lot of work to people be able to see us, because some people just don't see us because we are not famous or we are not a company. So yeah, our goal is to be seen anywhere in the world and for us to be recognized for our work.
I think that's, you know, a noble pursuit. The work itself of filming, like you said, you've been working since 2021 on this project. That's 4 years already set aside to this, and now you're on like the whole other side of the project doing all the back end work. If you could sum up sort of the heart of Producto Local in a phrase or maybe in spirit, what would that look like?
I call it to be Producto Local is the new indie, you know, or the B series cinema that we've been losing since the 80s.
Okay. For me, I would say that some people may like it, some people may hate it, but we've done something from the bottom to the top. So after doing all these series, and we have met some very professionals, people who work in the industry, and they call us crazy, they call us because they said that nowadays the cinema is done from the bottom to the top to the bottom, from a big company that looks for a production company and the production looks for the director, and it goes from the bottom, from the top to the bottom. And what we've done is been more from the bottom to the top. And they told us, okay, that's how you do art. That's how you create art. But that's not how films are made nowadays. So that's it. We have done something from the bottom upwards.
Well, I think it's important to have a strong foundation. And so when you build from the bottom to the top, you're building the foundation. And I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of probably our most influential artists, our most creative filmmakers, were told that they were crazy at some point. So I think you're on the right track.
Thank you.
I want to give you the opportunity to just talk about anything else that I didn't maybe ask you a question about. Was there something specific that you wanted to let the audience know?
I would like to let the audience know that anyone can contact me on Instagram. I think that it's the first way of contact, that it's the easier, the easiest. And as we have stated, we want it to be portrayed, to be screened in anywhere. So even if it is in a big university, as we have planned in Spain, or is it even sitting a small cultural place, anywhere that it could be screened, it's a place that we would love to share with. So I invite your audience to contact me, to contact us, to prepare a screening for the premiere of the two first episodes. And we would love to share it with anyone and anywhere in the world.
That sounds awesome. And I mean, yes, I've communicated with you on Instagram. It's very easy. I will make sure that I put up your Instagram link and the link to the YouTube channel so that people can check out your work. Was there anything else?
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you.
For hosting us.
We know we have to take English classes.
Yeah. You did great. You did great.
Yeah, English is our third language. So
we consume English podcasts or materials, but speaking it is not what we are best for.
Well, Carmen, Haxa, you both did a wonderful job. I have no notes. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you both being here with me today. I wish you the best of luck on Producto Local and getting it into the right hands at the right time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for this spotlight session right here on Bad Movies We Love. If you enjoyed the conversation, be sure to follow the show, leave us a review, and share it with your fellow movie lovers. And a huge thank you to Haxa and Carmen for sharing not just their time, but their stories, their insight, and their experience with us here today. You can find more of their work at Haxa Indie Films on YouTube and Instagram, and that's spelled J-A-X-A. Links for that will be up in the show notes, and until next time, keep loving what others might leave behind.